What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 62, Sports, Asthma, and Pasadena. Oh my, recorded December 24th, 2013. Our special guest today is Dr. Amit Parikh. I, of course, am your host, Jeremy Jackson.
Brianna.
George.
Marissa.
Morena.
Jocelyn.
Edith.
Lorena.
Marlin.
Alex.
And then the rest of the sports medicine students and Dr. Parikh are all here with us in the studio today. You can join our conversation on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/live. And then that's where you can have the Ustream or the YouTube. So you can join it and join the conversation live. And Marissa and Morena are supposed to be watching the social stream or the chat feature there on Ustream. And if you have a comment, they should be able to read it, but we're still working on efficiency there. So again, you can join the conversation that way or via Twitter, which Alex is on my Twitter today. So if you tweet to me at PHS Sports Med, she should be able to see it and read your comment or answer your question via Twitter. Today's meet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast. That's Brianna. She's on there. She's commented more than once about how she would love for somebody to interact with her. So today's meet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast. It's an easy way for you to chat. Again, ask your questions, and that way she would have to read them on air. So again, today's meet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast if you want to chat that way. And then our website has all that stuff on there, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. All right, real quick about Dr. Parikh. Dr. Parikh is a primary care sports medicine physician at Houston Center for Family Practice and Sports Medicine, and at the end of the show we'll give you the link to that. He's been in the profession for about 9 years, and one of the interesting things, he's worked with the Pittsburgh Pirates. All right, so we're going to get to some more about all that stuff a little bit later. So I know some of you guys here don't know what Pittsburgh Pirates are, but that's baseball. Okay. Some of you did know. On Google Plus, I found out that filmon.tv could possibly be selling my podcast. So if you're listening to this podcast on filmon.tv, if you're paying 99 cents or whatever it is for this podcast, then, you know, shame on you for paying for it, but good for filmon.tv for making you pay for it. This is free on YouTube or Ustream or our website. So if you're on filmon.tv and you're paying 99 cents or whatever it is to listen or watch this podcast, then just know that you can go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com and listen to it for free, or you can continue to pay for it. All right, so we're going to be talking today about asthma. If you've been here to Pasadena, you'll see, if you look out the front door, you can see no less than a dozen smokestacks and chemical plants. And so I'm just wondering how many people here have been actually diagnosed, not your grandma that was a doctor in her previous life told you you have asthma, but actually been diagnosed by a doctor with asthma. Anybody? Edith, you raise your hand. Mm-hmm. Lorena, you got asthma? Nobody else? Anybody else? All right, so we got one out of about 13, I think, in here, one out of 14, been diagnosed with asthma. So, and I have some questions personally about the opposite of exercise-induced asthma, which we're going to be talking about. So, and then it is getting close to the end of the year, so CEU opportunities. You can always get CEUs for listening to this, joining ghats.org, and then filling out the evaluation form in the members-only area. So if you have CEUs that you need to get, listen in, fill out the form. I can send you the certificate. Got it? All right, so now we're going to get to Dr. Parikh, starting off with Jocelyn.
Dr. Parikh, give us some background on how you got to where you are now.
Well, after high school, I went to college for 4 years. I went to University of Texas. And then after that, I went to medical school at University of North Texas in Fort Worth. I did a three-year residency in family practice, also in Fort Worth, and then I did a year fellowship in Wichita, Kansas. So it takes about 12 years to get to be a primary care sports medicine physician.
That's nice.
All right, so some of you are interested in sports medicine here. It's about 12 years worth of schooling before you actually get to really be on your own. So just take that into account when you're figuring out what you want to do with your life. All right, so tell us a little bit more about that, about your schooling.
So while I was in medical school, actually, one of the Olympic team doctors, his name was Dr. Stockard, was a mentor to a lot of the students. And so he would bring in speakers. One of his former students was the team doctor for the San Antonio Spurs. And but we used to shadow him at the high school games, go on the sideline, and this is just a really good population to take care of. Patients that want to get better, they're very interested in their health, and so that's kind of how I got interested in sports medicine. And then during residency, I followed a high school team and did some event coverage when I was a medical student and resident too.
All right, so then how did you go? I guess I'm wondering how you get to a specialization in asthma and breathing from being a primary care sports physician. How did you kind of move that direction, or why did you pick that?
So, I mean, this is just one of the many things that we'll treat as primary care physicians. Asthma is so common. It's one of the things that we address a lot. We see a lot of breathing difficulties on, people come in. They get short of breath after exercise. And we'll go into some of that afterwards. But it's just one of the many things that we treat. We also treat musculoskeletal injuries. We do pre-participation physicals and cardiac screenings. We'll do stress tests, those kind of things. So it's just another thing that we see a lot of. And because we take care of athletes, we see a lot of exercise-induced asthma, which is different from asthma, and we'll get into that a little bit later today.
All right, so before we get to any of that, I have a condition where it's just in my head. It's not like diagnosed or anything, but is there an opposite of exercise-induced asthma? Because sometimes I'll be sitting on the couch and I have like trouble catching my breath. Like I have to consciously take a really deep breath and like that kind of thing. But if I'm exercising or working out, I never seem to have that problem. Is there, I know a lot of these things are mental, but is there anything opposite of exercise-induced asthma?
Well, I wouldn't call anything opposite of, because, it's a pretty distinct clinical diagnosis when you're making that. But you can have some difficulty even at rest. And, the question is, do you have baseline, just regular asthma? That's a question that you may want to answer.
I gotcha. Yeah. Do you have something?
Oh, yeah. I would always, I went to the doctor once because, I was, had, really bad shortness of breath and, I would, seem to faint sometimes. And so, I went and they told me I had anemia. So I said, that could probably be a reason why, you have shortness of breath or something.
Anemic?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point that you bring up. So people come in with shortness of breath. You don't want to just focus in right away and say, all right, we need to do your pulmonary function tests and do those kind of things. You want to get blood work. We do see a lot of anemia from time to time in the population. So if you don't have enough blood, how can you store enough oxygen to get to, blood to where it needs to go? And so, the shortness of breath that you see with anemia is because the body is having to work even harder to get oxygen to the tissues and the cells that need to do their work, basically. So that's a good point.
All right, so real quick on anemia, isn't that a lot more common in females than males?
Yeah, we do see more anemia in females, especially if they have heavy menstrual periods. We can see that a lot, too.
All right.
Can you define asthma in both medical terms and words that are easy to understand?
Sure, absolutely. So asthma is a chronic. That means a long-term condition that's been going on usually over a year, in which you have inflammation or narrowing of the artery, of the bronchioles. So if you imagine a tree, if it's upside down, the branches would be the small bronchioles. It'd be analogous to that. And that's where you have narrowing of those bronchioles. So, and you can have inflammation there. So it's difficult to exchange oxygen, to get oxygen into the bloodstream there. So that's why sometimes you'll see wheezing and those kind of conditions. And patients that have a lot of asthma, they, a lot of times they'll cough, they'll come in, they'll be coughing up mucus plugs, phlegm, those kind of things. And those mucus plugs can plug up those small bronchioles or the tree branches, basically. So it's hard to get air to where it needs to go.
All right, so, it's that kind of that time of year where it's hot and cold, hot and cold, and that tends to cause a lot of sinus stuff. Is there something that you're talking about, mucus plugs, people coughing stuff up? Is there something that people should be concerned about? You know, because sometimes my snot is like really green if I'm blowing my nose.
Right.
And I know that I've heard that that means that there's a sinus infection, but you know, sometimes maybe if it's like a darker color, does that mean that it's coming from the lungs or anything like that?
It's really hard to say. I mean, you can have, you know, your upper airway is basically your throat down, you know, close to your lungs, basically, and then you have your lungs, right? And so you can have, if you have a sinus infection, that would be coming from your upper respiratory tree. And then, or even if you had upper respiratory infection, which a lot of, usually is just viral. And then if you have, you know, if you're having difficulty breathing, that's different. If you start running fever or having chills, that's different. And so, you know, if you're having trouble and it's been going on for several days, you should probably get it checked out. But if it's like been going on just in, and you're having a cold, you know, you may want to wait a few days before you get it checked out. But if, I mean, the hallmark thing you want to look at is that you're having trouble catching your breath, you know, or having difficulty, you know, getting better.
All right. So having trouble catching breath or, you know, over an extended period of time, not just the week that you're sick.
Yeah.
And I would say, just to kind of clarify, that you're saying that mucus color doesn't indicate any specific condition.
That's correct.
All right. All right. So I know Brianna was worried about mucus color, so go ahead and move on from there. Just kidding. Just messing with Brianna. So,
can you tell us about the different types or classifications of asthma?
So, you know, I think the first thing is asthma, and that's what we're going to start talking about, is basically, you know, narrowing of the bronchioles. And there's you know, four basic types we classify it as. You know, there's intermittent, which happens, you know, maybe 1 to 2 times a week. Then there's mild, moderate, and severe. And they're all graded basically on a scale that we look at based on how often you're having symptoms throughout the year and throughout the week, basically. So that's kind of how we grade it. And if we usually start, you know, if you're having just intermittent symptoms, we wouldn't put you on medication right away. We may look at some of the triggers that may be causing your asthma. A lot of patients that have allergies are more prone to developing asthma, and we think that they may be related. And so we'll look at allergy triggers. We'll look at how often you're having symptoms before we'll do a full workup. Now, a different topic is exercise-induced asthma, and that is patients that have narrowing of the lungs basically after exercise. And that usually starts maybe 5 or 10 minutes after exercise and lasts 30 minutes after exercise. And other times, those patients don't have problems. So that's a totally different condition, and that's more of what we call an obstructive condition, where you can't get air out of your lungs, whereas asthma is you can't get air into your lungs. So there are two different, you know, different things there. So, but that's basically how we classify it. Now, there's some other conditions that you'll see asthma in, but those are probably the ones that are most important for you guys to know.
Can you repeat that last part? What did you say it was when you can't get air out of your lungs?
Yeah, so, you know, obstructive, basically obstruction means that you can't get air. You can breathe air in, but you have difficulty breathing air out. And you know, it may present similarly, and unless you do the spirometry testing, which we'll talk about here a little bit later, you wouldn't know which is obstructive versus restrictive until you get those readings on the machine that allow us to look at that.
Interesting.
So obstruction, you also see that, like, patients that smoke for a long period of time and they have lung issues, they get an obstructive pattern, and it's difficult for them to breathe air out of their lungs. They can breathe air in, but breathing out is difficulty. So there's a difference between restrictive and obstructive.
It seems so odd. It seems like it would, if it's open one way, it should be open the other way, but
yeah, and it's, you know, when you actually look at a lung, it's almost like balloon type consistency. And there's certain things, like, you know, smoking and those kind of things can really affect the ability for that lung to expand and contract. So it sounds confusing, but after you think about it for a while, it can become a little bit clearer.
I gotcha.
How does someone get diagnosed with asthma?
Well, that's a really good question. So usually what we do in the office is if we're concerned about asthma, we have a little machine called a spirometer. And they'll blow into this machine, and the machine gives us calculations of how much air that they were able to blow out in 1 second, basically. And we have certain parameters that we look at of what an average lung capacity should be, and we can calculate what this patient's lung capacity is and how much air they're able to blow out in 1 second. And we'll look at percentages there, and if there's, if it falls in a certain category, we can say that that patient may have an obstructive issue or a restrictive issue. So, and these spirometers have become really nice and small now, and you can basically take those to the, to the sideline, to a field. You can even it's the size of an iPad, basically, and you can just have someone blow into this machine and basically get instant analysis of that. Now, there's some more formalized lung testing that you can do, too, where you can have a patient blow in certain gases and take a look and see. And those are required for formal asthma testing for some agencies, like if patient's an Olympian or those kind of things, you need to get more formal testing for that. So, but usually what we'll do is we'll have them come into the office, we'll have them blow into this machine, and now if we're concerned about exercise-induced asthma, sometimes we'll do that, and then we'll have them go run, and then have them test again. So that's usually what we do.
All right, so kind of when we were in your notes here, you'd mentioned them breathing in this gas or this other compound. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done that? Or?
Well, I've seen it done. It's usually done at the children's hospitals. They have a lab like that at Texas Children's. And basically, when you do that, you have to be prepared for if this patient stops breathing. And so you have to have your crash cart and all those kind of things ready if you do that. And so that's why usually you're only going to do that kind of formalized testing at in a formal lab where you're equipped to handle those situations.
Anybody want to volunteer to go to the doctor and breathe in some compound that may make you stop breathing? Anybody? All right, we're signing Edith up. We'll videotape it and broadcast it live. Just seems so crazy, but I guess it's necessary at some point.
Yeah, it is. It's it can be pretty scary for both the patient and the physician.
Can people manage their breathing without drugs?
Well, oftentimes, yeah. I mean, if you have an allergy trigger, if you kind of modify when you're outside or modify when you're you need to really kind of figure out what's triggering that. But, I would be hesitant to say that, be afraid of taking like this medication, because if you have asthma, you need the medicine, and you don't want to not take the medicine because, if you've ever seen a patient that has a bad asthma attack, that can be pretty disconcerting. And, patients die from not being able to breathe. And actually this year on the sideline of one of the games, one of the cheerleading staff had difficulty breathing, and I luckily had an inhaler in my pocket. He had forgotten his, and in that emergency situation, I was able to give him mine, and he was able to kind of settle down after 10, 15 minutes,
All right, so, I just recently watched World War Z. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Well, it doesn't really give away if I tell this part, but there's a part where Brad Pitt's, whatever his name is in the movie, daughter is having an asthma attack, and they don't have the inhaler, and so they're freaking out. And so then they're trying to, talk to her to get her control her breathing. And I'm not sure if it's an asthma or a panic attack, either way there. So if someone has asthma and they've been prescribed an inhaler, what are the chances that they can control their breathing or get past that asthma attack without the inhaler?
It's highly variable. I mean, I've seen patients that were controlled for years that have a really bad asthma attack, and I've had patients that that you think aren't going to be able to just respond to their and they do fine. So, I mean, it's complicated, I guess I would say, and you don't want to take the chances of just, oh, don't use your, if you need your inhaler, use it. You know, I would say that, you know, that the risks of not using an inhaler when you know you have asthma, you don't want to take that chance, basically.
Okay. Yeah, I think one of the questions coming up is going to ask some more about that, so we'll wait. That way I don't steal anybody's thunder.
What are some problems with athletes sharing inhalers?
Yeah, so, I mean, what I was telling Jeremy is, like, would you share your toothbrush with anyone else? I mean, it's just, you know, hygiene issues. You know, you just don't want to get in the habit of doing anything like that. And, you know, like these inhalers, some of them don't even have a counter on the back of them. So how do you know that inhaler is full? You know, these are questions that you need to know. But from a hygiene standpoint and from a health standpoint, it's just not a good idea to share any medicine.
So what about the safety? I know that different inhalers are different drugs. And we just talked about breathing in certain compounds could possibly stop your breathing. Mm-hmm. Is that something that could possibly happen if maybe I have asthma and you have asthma and then you give me your inhaler?
Well, you know, the first thing is, even when we look at the inhalers, you know, there could be two blue inhalers that one may be a long-term inhaler that has a completely different compound in it at a different percentage. So, you know, your therapy is tailored to you by your doctor. And so it's not a good idea to just use someone else's inhaler, you know. So you just sometimes you don't even know what's in there, you know. And just because of the color doesn't mean that it's the same. You know, there's three, there's a red one, a blue one, and a light blue one right now that are both albuterol, same percentage. But if you look at them, you'd never be able to guess that they're the same inhaler. So, and there's a chart that actually you can get for the training room that has all the different inhalers and what is in it, just so you can have that, you know, put it up on the wall.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the biggest things is, you know, some of these kids, they say, I have asthma, but I left my inhaler at home. And so I want to know, obviously you say because of hygiene, you don't want to mix inhalers, but I don't, because of the possible a reaction, I don't ever want to say, well, here, just use his inhaler, because one, that's theirs that they paid for, two, that's their mouth that you're putting yours on.
Yeah.
And then three, I don't want to have to call the ambulance and give you, you know, mouth to mouth because your breathing stopped. And so I really just...
So, you know, asthma, like any other chronic disease, and chronic means that it's been going on a long time, the patient needs to buy into their own healthcare and needs to understand that this is something that I have, and this is what I need to, you know, I need to take care of myself. And, you know, when we do the pre-participation physicals in the, you know, in the spring and the fall, if the patient has asthma, we usually write keep inhaler with patient at all times. And that means that they need to keep one, you know, in the training room or with the training staff and one with themselves, you know. And, you know, I can't tell you how many of these forms that I fill out so that the patient can keep an inhaler with them at school, but it's just a good idea, good practice. This is something that you have. You need to own up and basically understand that you may need this, and the parents need to know that, and their doctors need to know that, you know. So
I like that. You just have to take responsibility for that. Yeah. And take care of it. Very good, very good.
What is a top tip for athletic trainers dealing with athletes with breathing difficulties?
So, you know, we're all part of the same team here. And so, you know, the responsibility is basically really the athlete needs to know what they have, you know, and we're there to support them. So, you know, we need to make sure that we have an inhaler that isn't expired, that we have, you know, on hand, and it's theirs, you know, basically. We need to know that they know how to use it. A lot of times we'll often use a spacer too that will help deliver medication better. And if they have that, they need to know how to use that. And basically the things that we do on the sideline, we need to make sure that we're all trained. So in the event of an emergency, that we're all on the same page. Everyone needs to know where the equipment is in case that somebody stops breathing, where that is. And basically it's just teamwork with the patients, their parents, the doctor, and the athletic trainer. We all need to be on the same page.
All right, so I think in general, I feel that we've been talking about mostly just asthma in general. Mm-hmm. As far as exercise-induced asthma, is that usually given an inhaler?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. So, you know, so these patients are the ones that basically they exercise and 10, 15 minutes into their exercise, they start having some shortness of breath. And it really manifests or peaks after exercise. And so maybe, you know, 15, 20 minutes after exercise, they're wheezing, they can be coughing, they can think that they have like sore throat and just basically difficulty catching their breath. You know, if they're, and we'll see this a lot in track, soccer, those kind of athletes. So, you know, if they have exercise-induced asthma, you want to use that inhaler, if you have one, 30 minutes before you go out to exercise. That's kind of when we know that we're going to be able to deliver the medication. It's going to have enough time to get into the bloodstream and that you're going to have, you know, an effect from it. There's also other medications, too. You know, there's medications like Singulair, which are tablets that work through different mechanisms to help control asthma. But basically, if you suspect that and it's been diagnosed, then, you know, they need to take the medicine that they need to do to treat it.
All right, so with the kind of what I'm understanding here, making sure I'm understanding this correct, is the best way for an exercise-induced asthma athlete to manage theirs is to own it, to be responsible, and then to use the inhaler before, like 30 minutes before, to ensure that the medicine has had a chance to start working.
Right.
Before, rather than wait until they're having an asthma attack and then try and calm it down.
Right. And, you know, like Friday, it's going to be really cold. You know, when it's really cold, we see a higher incidence of patients that this may be triggered in. And also, I mean, Houston has some of the worst air quality in the nation. And so we see a lot more difficulties breathing because of that, those kind of issues too. You know, environmental plays a big role in these things, you know.
Yeah, that was part of the title there. It's, like I said, across the street, and literally dozens of factories and chemical plants and whatnot. So I'm wondering why Lorena is the only one that's been diagnosed with asthma, because it's really just amazing that 90% of our kids are not. So,
how can we positively impact our students when we are literally across the street from the factories?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't been out to this area, and when I was driving up, you know, I saw all the different, you know, factories, and it looks like there's some chemical plants and those kind of things out here. So, you know, I think because that this is a high industrial area that has a lot of this kind of, you know, probably processing plants out here, that, you know, you may see a higher incidence here in Pasadena than we do out in Cypress, where my office is. But basically, I think we need to know, or you guys should look into, you know, what are the pollutants that, you know, what are they releasing, and maybe the EPA, or maybe, you know, even a lot of these companies may provide that information, you know, of what is being released into the air. And you know, they have these measurements called parts per million, basically, that you can find out what kind of chemicals are in the air, and there's probably some local agency too that can help you out with those kind of things. But I think it's probably a safe assumption to make that probably the air quality here is a lot different from the air quality in other parts of Houston.
Yeah. And so with that, there's really nothing I can do to control the air quality. Mm-hmm. So I guess the only thing I could do is educate students that have breathing difficulties to use their medicine beforehand. But is there anything else that you could think of that we could possibly do to help reduce that? I mean, you know, you see lots of pictures of people in, I don't know, I'm just assuming it's Asia, with they'll walk around with masks, like the surgical masks or whatever, on their face because the air quality is poor.
Right.
Does something like that, does that work for, like, in general? And then would something like that in, at all in any way help or harm an athlete?
As far as the masks go, I mean, I'm from India and I've been to India and I've seen the pollution out there. And it's pretty bad. It's a lot, it's pretty bad. I mean, you'll just go outside for a day and you have difficulty breathing. And you know, I think they've made some changes there because they're running on natural gas versus, they used to run the rickshaws on kerosene out there. So, but you know, I think, these are, you know, important questions, you know, like as far as your athlete, and they're going to be probably even that much more susceptible to, you know, having these kind of issues. And basically you guys are frontline and reacting to those situations. And if they have, you know, trouble breathing and you suspect it or you see it on the sideline, you may want to, you know, have come out of the game for a little bit and just kind of evaluate their, you know, their lung function and work with your, you know, team physicians there on the sideline to take a look at those kind of things. But it's just, you just have to be prepared. I know this talk is kind of becoming into, like, you know, you need to be prepared for the situation, but it's you'll only realize how important it is when you've seen someone that have that issue, you know. So I think it's just really important.
So the mask or a bandana over your face is probably not going to help.
I don't think that's going to make too much of a difference, you know.
You'd look really cool, though.
Yeah. You should try it. You could scare your competition, I guess, if you showed up like that.
All right, but Alex, no, they next use softball
these,
practice.
They use these warming masks, you know, before in some of these cold cold air climates, you know. And they have shown that wearing this kind of mask to kind of warm the air, and when people are warming up 15, 20 minutes before their sport, have shown to help. But I mean, it looks pretty interesting when you see those masks. But if you ever watch some of the track and field events in some of the colder climates, you'll see that.
I'm gonna have to look for that next time. Of course, at the Winter Olympics coming up, they're not gonna have track and field. So yeah. I wonder if any of the, like, the snowboarders or skiers or any of those people have that kind of thing. Or if they just learn to adapt since they're always in the snow anyways.
They're in the snow, and they're also train a lot at altitude. And at altitude, your hemoglobin curve shifts to the right, basically, and you can retain more oxygen in those kind of altitude if you've trained in those kind of climates.
All right, so can you just tell us a little bit more about exercise-induced asthma in general, since we've been, you know, we've talking some about how we could possibly prevent, and since we know that face masks don't, and we know that using your medicine beforehand, can you just share a little bit more about exercise-induced asthma in general?
So, yeah, so 90% of patients that have asthma are going to show exercise-induced asthma at some point in time, and 10% of the general population is going to show this too. And it's basically what we were just talking about is, you know, 5-10 minutes into their sport, they start developing some shortness of breath. They may get a little cough. They may have, you know, they feel like there's something stuck in the back of their throat. And you can see sometimes some patients that their performance is really not up to par. I mean, this may be an athlete that usually runs, you know, 400 meters in really good time, and all of a sudden they're really slow. And you see them, and then they feel really tired sometimes. So it doesn't have to be that they have shortness of breath. It can manifest with some other symptoms as well. And basically what exercise-induced asthma is basically it's an obstructive process. So you have difficulty getting air out of your lungs when you start developing this. And it's caused by narrowing of the bronchioles as well, but it's a little bit different. And we think that cold air, the climate, the environment may trigger this, but we see a lot of this with allergies too. And depending on the trees and the pollen and the time of year, I see a peak instance of this in October, November, and then I see another second wave of this in March, April too. And so those patients that have uncontrolled allergies tend to be a lot more susceptible to developing these kind of issues. So, you know, they finish their exercise, they may seem fine, and then all of a sudden they'll come to you like afterwards and they're wheezing if you listen to their lungs, or you can hear them audibly wheezing, or basically they just have, you know, they just feel really tired. They don't feel like they're able to recover, those kind of things. So that's what's different about exercise-induced asthma.
All right.
How can breathing problems affect your sleep?
So, you know, there's some certain sleep conditions where you don't get enough air into your lungs, like sleep apnea, right? So those are patients that they may wake up, or you may see them and they can't catch their breath, you know, and you feel like they stop breathing actually at night. So those patients that have these underlying other sleep issues, they may have worsening if they have conditions like asthma and those kind of things as well.
All right, so working in Pittsburgh, from from what I, you know, you always see it's the Steel City and and that kind of thing. I would assume the factories are kind of bad there. Did you do much with asthma there when you're working with the Pirates? Or?
Well, actually, I cover them when they come down to Texas. So,
really?
Yeah, so if they're playing in Houston or if they're playing in – I went down to Arlington to work with them a couple of months ago when they were playing the Rangers out there. So, but, yeah, I mean, your question is a good question. I think we were going with the pollution out there. And I was asking their athletic trainer – they had two baseball players that have asthma on the team, and they monitor them pretty closely, you know.
So you're kind of the hometown doctor for the Steelers in Houston.
For the Pirates.
Pirates.
Yeah.
So Pittsburgh, sorry. The Pirates.
Yeah, I work with them when they're down here.
That's a pretty cool deal. Do most teams have that? Like, do the Astros have that when they go to different cities?
I think, you know, the organizations are all different. The Pirates like to have a crew of their own people work with them when they come into town. So it's a lot of fun taking care of those guys.
So anytime that they're playing in Houston, are you at the game or are you just available?
Well, we go before the game, and then we go to the game, and then afterwards we'll go back down into the training room. And
so you're going either to Houston or Arlington a few times a year?
Yeah, well, since the Astros now moved to American League, the Pirates aren't coming down here as much as they used to.
Oh, yeah.
But they had an interleague game with the Rangers this year that I went down for that for three games.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool deal. I actually had never heard of that. You know, I mean, you think of the doctors traveling with the teams, but with baseball, it's way too busy for a doctor to travel.
Yeah, there's so many games. And, you know, there's also the Astros team doctors can take care of some issues too if they come up, but some teams like having their own group of people that they're familiar with work with them.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's the same way here. We're with Memorial Hermann. It's easier for me to send them to Dr. Crumby because I know, like, I can text him, I can call him, I can email him, and if there's a problem, you know, we can communicate rather than just some guy that's down the street that I don't know and he'll never call me back. So I completely understand why they do that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that, never thought about that. So
when I was training in fellowship, we worked with a double-A team for the Royals. And since the Royals weren't that good back then, a lot of the guys that were getting up were moving directly from double-A up to the majors. So that was pretty neat to work with that organization.
Very cool. And that was just because of you said your mentor was one of the Olympic doctors?
When I did my fellowship in Wichita, Kansas, and their double-A team at the time was in Wichita. And so we went to all of those games, And then we had Wichita State University, and they made it to the Final Four last year. But, you know, basketball's huge in the Midwest. Football's huge down here in Texas. So a little bit different.
Gotcha.
Where can someone find out more?
So we'll provide a link, actually. I can get you a link to the Allergy and Asthma Foundation, and that's actually a really good resource, and they have some good information.
Michelle, also you think you could look that up? Is it just called Allergy and Asthma Foundation of America? Uh-huh. All right, so it's in the show notes. We'll put it in there, but Michelle, you think you could look that up, find the link, and put it in the notes? She's on it.
And
she's
they
good.
Actually have some really good resources, and for schools, they will send out stuff like the picture of the different inhalers and those kind of things, and they have some good education materials.
All right, so that chart you were talking about earlier, that's the best place to get that?
Right, right.
All right, very cool. And then do you happen to know, is there a cost to that? Or do they
No. For schools, I think they send it out for free.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, so athletic trainers, more free stuff, educate your kids, more posters to hang on your wall. And mm-hmm. I was talking to our administrator and telling him he could do my observation today. Why would you know, so it'd be perfect. Have some decoration up for them. So. All right. What about if the Allergy and Asthma Foundation, and then what if someone wants to find out more about you?
We have a website, www.hcfpsm.org, and my office number is 281-373-9400. We often have students come in shadow and residents and those kind of things too if they're interested in sports medicine.
So. A lot of places don't want high school students coming into shadow. Is that still a concern with your?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe wait till they're in college and they're really interested in sports medicine. Okay. That's usually when we start, and we even have fellows come through too, sports medicine fellows.
Gotcha. So very cool, very cool. Anybody else have any more questions about asthma, exercise-induced asthma, personal experiences, Lorena? Have you had any? Do you use an inhaler currently? No.
I did last year.
You did last year. And have you had any problems with it since?
Huh?
Have you had any problems with asthma since last year? Mm-hmm. All right. So, can people grow out of asthma?
Yeah, actually, a lot of patients that have childhood asthma don't have asthma later on when they're adults. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a once you have it, you always have it type condition. Although if it's diagnosed later on in life, those people seem to retain it longer. So, but yeah, that's actually absolutely. We see a lot of patients that have asthma when they're kids that they don't have problems when they're adolescents or adults.
I wonder if any of that has to do with like change of location because we were talking about allergies or if just the body growing opens up the pathways more. Or?
Yeah, I mean, you grow, your lung capacity is going to get a little bit bigger, but the percentages should probably stay pretty much the same. In a lot of patients, like if you run a lot, you become more efficient in your cardiovascular exchange too. So, you can adapt some things,
So someone with exercise-induced asthma, if we're trying to see if we can adapt them or get them to push past that, say they're right here, we have a lot of kids that are not – don't have health care. Mm-hmm. And so going to the doctor or getting an inhaler is kind of pricey. I mean, I know obviously if you need an inhaler, you need to use it. But what are some thoughts on that? Ways that these kids, since we live across the street from factories, they may not be able to go to the doctor, may not get an inhaler or be formally diagnosed with asthma. What are some thoughts on how we can help train them past that?
It's that's a sticky subject.
All right, so there's no legal advice here. This is just a
I think you just I know where you're going.
You have to
with
plead
this.
The fifth.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I would say that you got to get evaluated, and like maybe get them into a clinic that we'll take care of them, and maybe at a reduced rate or something like that. But I think it's real important to get diagnosed correctly, and. I know where you're going with this, but you just don't want to be on the wrong side of a right. situation.
I understand. So then after they've been diagnosed or they've been told that they have it and how to treat it, and then we can learn more about how to move them past that, treating it with the inhaler. So.
Right. Yeah, and then you can look at what activities tend to precipitate that. If they have a lot of trouble with some of the endurance sports, maybe they can. Participate in a sport that doesn't require so much endurance.
I just a kind of random question. Do many swimmers have asthma?
Yeah, because the cold water tends to trigger it. So We do see it in swimmers as well. Even though, you know, they're good endurance athletes, but we do see a lot of it just because of the cold water.
Okay. All right. So that one was just random. I had no really point. But I just know that swimmers tend to have a larger lung capacity because they have to hold their breath and they have to exercise while holding their breath, and, you know, it helps expand or something like that. But
yeah, no, I mean, they're very efficient, you know, individuals. Yeah. And so, but still, if there's some of the triggers are there, you can have it. I mean, even though you have a great lung capacity, you can still have asthma, you know.
Gotcha.
So,
all right. So kind of to summarize, if you think you have asthma, go get checked out. Don't try and just push past it, and then go from there on the advice of Dr. Parikh. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I'll endorse that.
Don't share inhalers, and know what you're working with. And then if you are across the street from factories, or if you're in a dust bowl, then the breathing barriers aren't necessarily going to help much, but they may look really cool, may look intimidating. If you're on the softball field like Alex is going to be wearing them, just going to paint them all up and cool stuff like that. So, all right. I think that's going to bring us towards the end.
We want to thank the people who made this broadcast possible. G Hats for sponsoring CEU Opportunities, Pasadena ISD Education Foundation, and Memorial Hermann.
All right. So then Memorial Hermann put on the Minute Maid Sports Medicine Conference, and that's where I met Dr. Parikh, and, you know, he was seemed pretty excited about coming and talking to kids and talking about asthma, exercise, induced asthma, and that kind of thing. So, you know, I thank them for that. And then also I thank you for coming out here.
Sure.
And then it was a great conversation today. Definitely helps me learn and grow.
If you have another topic, we'll be happy to come out.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm sure we do. I might contact you because we're looking for some other ones for our student choice topics. So Very cool. If you want to check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, that's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Almost every Wednesday you can watch live on Ustream. We have a special one tomorrow. Another podcaster, another athletic trainer podcaster we're going to be kind of on each other's shows. And so he's going to record it and put it at his show, and I'm going to record it and put it as my show. So it's going to be interesting, to say the least. Anyway, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has links to just about everything you need to know about the Sports Medicine Broadcast.
Follow us on Twitter at PHS Sports Med, Google Plus Sports Medicine Broadcast, and facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training.
And we're going to have links to Dr. Parikh's website and then the AAFA.org that he mentioned earlier. For Jeremy,
Brianna,
George,
Marissa,
Morena,
Jocelyn,
Edith,
Lorena,
Marlon,
Alex.
That's a wrap.